From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I have a fun show ahead for you tonight. We're going to talk about classic television. I'm so sick of what's on TV right now, and thank heavens for the MeTVs and the TV lens that are out there. So we're going to cover three shows that I find important. Of course, we're in Canada, so we're going to talk a little bit about Corner Gas, one of our favorite Canadian shows. But where would we be without classic sitcoms like I Love Lucy and My Three Sons? And welcoming back to the show is Stan Livingston, who played Chip on My Three Sons. Welcome back, Stan. How are you?
Hi, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, talking about classic TV, and again, thank heavens for MeTV and TV Land and a few of the other channels that are out there. My Three Sons from, if I have this right, 1960 to 72, 12 years?
Correct, yeah. It became the second longest running sitcom ever on TV.
Now, that's next to what?
Oh, set to catch up with us, I think, this year. I forget which one, but it's been about 30 years since anybody got near that.
Now, it was next to what, Ozzie and Harriet? And I think you were on that, too.
Well, Ozzie and Harriet's actually the longest-running sitcom ever on TV. They ran 14 years, and that's where I started in the business, about 1957, as a neighborhood kid on that show.
How did that happen? How did you get picked up on Ozzie and Harriet?
Well, I had already started my career, I guess, as an actor. I went to a swim school in Hollywood, and Hollywood-type people used to send their kids there to learn how to swim, and an agent's daughter was going there to learn how to swim, and she spotted me, and I was kind of cute and extroverted, and she talked my mom into sending me out on some things. Of course, I was sent out as an extra. I didn't have any lines yet, but one of the things I was sent out on was an Ozzie and Harriet. I had no lines, but in the midst of shooting the scene, Ozzie Nelson came up to me and said, "Hey, I just want you to say this line," and gave me the line to say, and I said it, and next thing I knew, he was calling my agent to have me come back, and from about 1957 to about 1960, I probably did four or five shows a year for the Nelsons as a neighborhood kid, and began My Three Sons. We did the pilot in 59 and went on the air in 1960, so I couldn't go back to Ozzie and Harriet anymore, and started the run on My Three Sons, which went an incredible 12 years. In fact, the last show I did for Ozzie Nelson, I actually did with my younger brother, Barry Livingston, who eventually came over to My Three Sons and played the part of Ernie, but we actually did one episode together on Ozzie and Harriet, and after I left the show, he became the perpetual neighborhood kid.
Stan Livingston's here. We're talking about My Three Sons, and of course, his career. Now, you did some film work, too. What got you started in the movies?
Well, once you get the ball rolling, you know, your agents are looking for all kinds of work for you, and I did a lot of TV work from about 1957 to 1960, different TV shows that were on the air then, and I also started a movie career. I went out for an interview for a film called Please Donate the Daisies, starring Doris Day and David Niven. Before that, I was in Rally Around the Flag with Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward. I was also in some films that probably weren't as high profile, one of them being called The Bonnie Parker Story with Dorothy Provine, who some people may remember. But yeah, kind of got my feet wet in that field. I did some TV pilots. I did a TV pilot for Jackie Cooper called Skippy, which he held on to for a fortune, and it never sold, and thank God for that, or I would have never been in My Three Sons. He had let me out of the contract so I could go do that show.
Now, the last time we had you on, Stan, we were talking about the Actors Journey Project, and we could get into that in a little bit. I want to talk more about your journey. And now, with you starting with My Three Sons, Fred McMurray and the rest of the cast, how easy was it? How intimidating was that? I hear there was a different sort of a filming schedule. You had to film around Fred McMurray a little bit.
Yeah, and as daunting, I think, as that would sound to somebody today and even back then, it really wasn't that unfamiliar with anybody doing film work. You never shoot really in continuity unless you're doing a live show. So we were always shooting out of continuity, and because of Fred's schedule, his shooting schedule was contracted that he would come in and work for about 3 months, go on vacation for 3 months, and then come back for about another 3 months at the end of the year to finish up the season. So what it meant was when he was working, he was actually in every single scene that day, and sometimes they would shoot the master and his close-up and skip our close-ups and not get back to those close-ups for could be 6-7 months later. So that was a little bit, you know, strange sometimes that we'd have to do things like that. But, you know, after 12 years of doing it, it was a piece of cake.
Yeah, I'll bet, I'll bet.
Yeah, you know, in fact, it was great as a filmmaker because you can see how things are shot out of continuity and then can be put back together in the editing room, and as long as you have a good script supervisor. That, you know, you can get that stuff done.
What do you think of the seeing yourself now all these years later on the MeTVs? And I know you've done a little bit of promo work for the MTV Land, the other shows. How is it daunting? Is it a little strange, or is it just nice history?
No, I mean it's sort of distant, familiar at the same time. It's kind of looking through a photo album. Sometimes you see the picture and you know it's you, but you go, "Gosh, I don't really remember taking that picture that day." At this point in time, we did almost 400 episodes. I think we did 380 episodes, and they all kind of blend together into one gigantic episode. But, you know, when I'll sit down and occasionally see an episode either on DVD or I think MeTV runs My Three Sons, although I think it may be off for the summer. You know, you look at it and you go, "I don't remember anything about that at all," and then all of a sudden a scene will come on and it'll jog your memory and you have a flood of memories about that day or that scene or the person you worked with. So, you know, I just feel that it's just beyond my wildest imagination that you could shoot something that, you know, was 50, 54 years ago. And we're probably more popular now than we were in the 60s. It's hard for audiences today to put that in perspective because it's so fragmented. But, you know, TV's got, what, 1,000 channels?
Yeah.
So the audiences are watching this and that, and, you know, it's spread all over the place. And even the networks, you know, what are you getting? Maybe 10 million people watching a show.
Yeah.
In 1960, there was 3 networks. That was it. That was your 3 choices. And, you know, a few sometimes local networks if you lived in a bigger city. But, you know, when a show like My Three Sons was on the air and you were a top show, you had 40, 50, 60 million people watching you every week. And multiply that by 52 and then by 12 years.
Yeah, no, exactly. Stan Livingston's here. We're talking classic TV tonight, and he was on My Three Sons. He played Chip. Now I'm going to interview Keith Thibodeau a little bit later on, little Ricky from I Love Lucy. But
oh, yes.
Connection with Desilu Studios, and in particular somebody from I Love Lucy, Bill Frawley. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, Bill Frawley came onto our show. Well, the show's cast, it was an all-male cast, and that was kind of the idea of the show. The conceit was this all-male family, a dad, his 3 sons, and a grandfather all living together, you know, helping each other get through life. Steve Douglas, Fred McMurray part, was a widow. So it was kind of unusual in those days. Most households were complete, and there was a wife or a womanly influence around. All we ever had was a date now and then, including Fred. But, yeah, working with William Frawley was fun because I obviously knew of him. I was, you know, 9 years old, and I was a big fan of I Love Lucy. And probably my favorite character on the show was William Frawley, the Fred Mertz character. So when he came onto that show, that was probably the person I hung around with the most. I never knew either of my real grandfathers. They had passed away before I was born, so he became the surrogate grandfather in my life, and yeah, we hung out together. I'd eat lunch with him every single day, and you know, he would take me to baseball games after work. We'd go to the Dodgers, and you know, he had a driver, so we'd hang out.
Yeah.
Can't say he was the best influence in the world for a young kid, but that was...
Well, yeah, exactly. You did an interview with LA Beat Magazine here recently, and I encourage everyone, just click on the link in the show notes, it'll take you there. And you're talking about Bill Frawley a little bit, and if I got this right, he left the show because of medical reasons, and basically when they went to do his physical, they... they weren't sure.
Couldn't find his heart, basically.
He couldn't find his heart. Now, we shouldn't laugh about this, but I'm thinking he would laugh about it a little bit now. Is it true that he came back to the set after William Demarest started, and there was a bit of a feud between the two of them?
Yeah, I can't say there was a feud, but there was a little bit of tension. I mean, you're looking the guy in the face that just took your job, and you know, Bill didn't quite think he was ready to leave the planet yet, which, you know, nobody ever is.
No.
But it wasn't up to him, and it really wasn't even up to the producers. Every year, everybody had to undergo a physical to make sure he would live through the season. And Bill just, you know, he was having issues with his heart. So, yeah, when he came back, it he obviously knew Bill Demarest, but it was tense. You know, it's tense, and I think I was of the age, at least then, where I could feel some of that tension. And, you know, and I loved Bill dearly, and, you know, being a kid when he left, it was... I don't want to say that I didn't like Bill Demarest, because ultimately I liked him probably as much as Bill Frawley. But at, when he first came, it would be like having a parent, and then your mom dies, and now you got a new mom. You know,
sure.
You're not
going
to exactly welcome her with open arms, and it's a little bit of, you know, feelings like that going on. But you know, eventually, Bill Demarest is a great guy too. But he, you know, at that time he had just taken my friend's job, and I loved Bill dearly, and you know, he was just somebody that I missed, and you know, I could feel his pain, I guess you could say, coming there and, you know, just kind of watching something that you were once intimately involved in.
When what about the studio? What was it like to be around the studio
in
those
days?
Oh, it was
a great studio to work on at that time. I mean, the history of that studio was the old RKO Studios, which, you know, Howard Hughes was associated with. They did a lot of filming there. It eventually was purchased by Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball. As it actually was a number of studios. There was another one a few blocks away on Cahuenga, also called Desi Lu Studios. And then they had a third studio out in Culver City called 40 Acres, which it was big. They had a lot of exterior sets there. We primarily shot on the main Desi Lu Studios, which was at Melrose and Gower. And at the time we were there, there was incredible show shooting. I mean, right next door was the Lucy show, so... Right next door was Lucy and, you know, Vivian Vance shooting, not I Love Lucy, but I guess you call it the sequel to it, or right, extension of it. But, you know, if you went up the street, they started shooting Star Trek eventually, and Hogan's Heroes, my favorite Martian. When we first got to the lot, Ben Casey was still shooting there, The Untouchables.
Wow.
So when I didn't have anything to do, I'd have to go over to these guys' sets and hang out with them or watch them shoot, and you know, it was great. You know, it was kind of like an extended family. Everybody knew everybody on the lot, and
absolutely,
you know, you'd see them or hang out with them, or you know, everybody's pretty nice to everybody.
And I think you told me a story last time you were on the show about Bill Frawley and you going to try to interrupt Vivian Vance's scenes a little bit. Can you share that with us again?
Oh, well, I mean, towards the end of, you know, Bill's life, he was really kind of struggling, in, and it was really a problem for the producers to know how to write the scene for him to do.
Uh-huh.
And the challenge was, if you gave him too much dialogue, he probably was going to have trouble remembering it. So they try and keep his responses or his lines to, you know, a few words. And the other big problem was, is if he didn't have every other line, in other words, my character would speak, and then Bill would speak, then Fred would speak, and we might not get back to Bill in four or five lines, he'd fall asleep. So during his close-up, what they would do is, to keep him from doing that, they'd usually have him seated. If you notice, kind of in the earlier days, he's always standing up and got a broom in his hand or a frying pan or something. So
yeah,
they took to have him seated. And what they would do is they'd slip his shoe off, and they would have me set it, you know, off camera, but kind of near where he would have to look. And my job was to pinch his toe, to keep him awake. And I think he was starting to catch on, because he would get, you know, like, why do I have to take off my shoe?
Yeah.
I don't understand what this has to do with acting. He didn't quite figure out that everyone's eyes just grabbing his foot or nudging him to keep him awake in between lines. And, you know, he could really let out with a machine gun of expletives, put it that way.
Now, I'm going to ask Keith, but I'll ask you, how did he really get along with Vivian Vance?
Well, this is my personal take. I mean, I always heard about the feud, and having been there and seen that, you know, I look at it now, and I think there was stuff going on where they would yell at each other, and Bill had me involved in some pranks against her and things like that. But you know what? I think it's something that they just sort of carried on, and it wasn't really with any kind of hostility. It kind of got started, and people kind of laughed about it because they were both pretty creative with words. And it just became one of those things that I think everybody wondered, you know, if they were going to say anything to each other. And so they obliged him by giving him a good show. And I think deep down it wasn't, you know, the really hostile kind of rivalry or whatever was going on. I think they were just fulfilling everybody's wish that they would get entertained by them, and they gave them a good show. Like I said, they would machine gun out a few choice words for each other, and you know, and then they'd move on.
I love that. I love that.
Horrible. That's my impression.
A few choice words.
Thought about it and thought how it was done. Yeah, I don't think it was some deep-seated hatred for each other at all.
Of course, I have to ask you your thoughts on the legend Fred McMurray.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy. This is, you know, putting it in perspective for today's audience. When Fred McMurray came to do My Three Sons, it was literally unheard of that a movie star of that caliber was actually going to deign to do a, you know, the grind of a TV show, you know, which meant you're there 5 days a week, 8 hours, 10 hours a day to do a TV series. It just, you know, guys like Fred McMurray occasionally would appear as a guest star in a Bob Hope show or maybe even a Lucy show or I Love Lucy. But, you know, they weren't seen on TV in any kind of regularity, at least not with somebody of Fred McMurray's stature in the industry. And, I mean, when he came to My Three Sons, he was huge. I mean, the guy had done probably 80, 90 movies up to that point. And it wasn't like he was coming to TV because his star had faded. He just got through starring in The Caine Mutiny with Humphrey Bogart. Had just got through starring in The Apartment with Jack Lemmon. He had kind of worked out some deal with Disney, who was paying him fabulously with shares in Disney stock. Had just done The Shaggy Dog. Had just done The Absent-Minded Professor. So when he came to do TV, it was his choice. But that's what I'm saying for audiences today. To realize what a big star he was coming to TV, I always kind of say, well, it would be like if suddenly Tom Cruise said, you know what, I'm going to do a TV series.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I would say Fred in his career was probably even more at the height of his career than Tom Cruise is right at this particular moment in time. You know, so it was a little bit odd, but because of his stature, the TV network, CBS or ABC at that time, was just falling all over themselves that they
sure.
had a movie star of that caliber doing a TV series. And our show was really handled with kid gloves by the network. You know, everybody wanted to come down and meet Fred and hang out with Fred. And, you know, presidents came by, you name it, royalty, because Fred was a huge, huge force in the industry at the time he started and all the way through the series. So. And as an actor, you have to look at him, his body of work.
Absolutely.
You know, as a little kid, he was just the guy I was doing the scenes with, but obviously later I learned who Fred McMurray was, and, you know, he's the guy that really, I think, was underestimated as an actor in the film industry, and in that he could do drama, he could play heavies, and he could do light comedy like no other person could segue easily from one to the other. I mean, if you look at him in Double Indemnity.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, you know, film noir, and then, you know, look at him in The Absent-Minded Professor. You know,
yeah.
Usually actors get known for one sort of thing, and it's sort of stereotypical, but Fred really could cross that line and do both just expertly.
Absolutely. Stan Livingston's here. We're talking about his career, and, of course, My Three Sons aired for 12 years on ABC and CBS. The brothers, Don Grady, sadly, has passed. Of course, your brother. Let's talk about working with the brothers.
Well, Barry's going gangbusters right now.
Yeah,
you know,
is he ever?
He, out of all of us, decided to continue on with the acting gig, and he's been doing that since My Three Sons, you know, appearing on different TV shows and guest parts or, you know, the guest lead for the week and feature films. So he's done all right. I was going to say he's really picked out some winners. He's in The Jersey Boys, which is out right now.
Yep.
But the last three films he was involved in were either nominated for an Academy Award or won. He was in Argo.
Yeah.
And the year before that, he was in The Social Network. And I think the year before that, he was in The Zodiac. So yeah, he's got a great sense of material, or at least he's lucky in what comes his way. And directors like working with him because he always he's an incredible actor. He really is. Every week, he's working on some other TV series. Tim Considine, who played the original older brother Mike, didn't go on as an actor. I think he's acted sporadically, but
yeah.
You know, his real love is automobiles. And he became a writer for the automotive industry, writing for Car and Driver and Motor Trend and all different types of auto. In fact, I think he was the president of the Automotive Writers Association for a while. And I think he's just finishing off another coffee table book on the history of automotive racing in the United States. So that's where his interest lies. Sadly, Don passed, but
yeah.
You know, he was involved in composing for probably the last 20 years of his life, doing you know, cues and writing music for different TV shows, for George Lucas, for Disney. Just a great guy. And, I mean, Don really was like a brother to me. He was 6 years older, and I kind of always felt like his little brother, and we stayed in contact, obviously. And it was kind of a sad thing when he got cancer, and nobody knew about it. We kind of did, but we swore an oath of silence because Don was actually still working at the time. And, you don't want to tell anybody you have cancer in this business because you won't get hired, and, you know, you want to get the job, and you want to keep on working, and he had a family, so it was kind of necessary. And I think it took most people by surprise because Don looked, he looked so good.
He
mean, he was truly the Dorian Gray out of all of us. I don't think he looked any different than when he left, they left my three sons.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I ask all actors about that, the final episode. What about the final episode of My Three Sons? How tough was it for you?
You know what? We really didn't have a final episode, unlike most shows that do shoot out each show in continuity. Well, not in continuity, but at least they're shooting out the last show. Our probably last day on the set was doing pickup shots from maybe 12 different shows where I had a kitchen scene where they go, okay, you get your pajama tops on in this and you're eating cereal. Okay, do the scene. Cut. All right, put that liver and onions in front of them and you're wearing this shirt now. We shoot that one. Cut. Okay, now you're eating roast beef and you have your blue shirt on. So that was probably my last day on it. You know, and I think it was just an overall feeling. And the show really wasn't, you know, kind of what it was in the beginning of the show. The show had transformed and mutated into this other thing. We had, you know, originally started out, the idea was three sons living with a dad and a grandfather. And by the end, Fred McMurray was married. Don Grady was married. They had triplets. I got married to Polly, Ronnie Troop on the show.
Yeah.
Barry, if we would have gone another year, he would have probably had to get married. I think the dog was married. It was, we were like the first family on welfare. All these people living under one roof. I mean, it was pretty crazy. But, yeah, we loved everybody. And just obviously have a progression. So, you know, it wasn't like we could just hang around the house with Dad and Uncle Charlie all day doing housework. So, you know, I think everybody on the show was ready to move on. And in fact, Don Grady was not in the last year of My Three Sons. A lot of people don't realize that because it feels like his presence was there because Katie was always reading letters from him and he was supposedly doing some kind of work down in Uruguay or Paraguay or, I don't know, I guess he was smuggling cocaine or something.
We don't want to start something.
But, you know, that's where the show had gone to. And so the last day was probably a succession of all these pickup shots that they needed to complete the episodes. But, you know, we'd all become such family at that point that we, you know, we really stayed in touch with each other. Tim, who had left the show the fifth year, and that's when my brother Barry came onto the show as a son, you know, I was always in touch with him. He kind of was another older brother, and I'm still in touch with Tim today. You know, we go to the Indy 500 together almost every year. And I see him for his birthday and Christmas and all that. And, you know, my real brother, obviously, I see all the time. So Tina, I'm going to be getting together with. She was just actually down in L.A. about 2 months ago, and she's kind of reunited with her King cousins, and they have an act that they're taking or have taken on the road. They do singing and performing. And everybody else, I guess, is up there waiting for us.
You know, with the advent of the internet, Stan, YouTube and all these channels, and you want to see an episode of My Three Sons, you just Google it and you'll be able to find it.
Yeah, you know, I think that's kind of cool. It introduces people to it. And, you know, it's such a shame that, you know, I think everything has gotten so, I hate to say the word greedy, but it has gotten greedy. You know, the network's not really showing some of these shows, especially older ones like ours. Ours took 20 years to come to DVD.
Yeah,
why?
I don't know.
Because the network didn't want to pay the musicians union to use the music that was in it.
Oh,
that is entirely the reason our show was never seen on DVD. Finally, about 5 years ago, they made some kind of deal, and they issued the first season of My Three Sons. And then the second season, again, they decided, let's release it, but let's strip out all the music, and we'll just put other music in, which is just, it's ridiculous, but whatever. The first season at least is out there. There's 39 shows intact with the correct music, and, you know, you'd say it's not such a big deal, but in our case it was. The music really was another character in the show. It sort of punctuated moments and was written, was kind of iconic, you know, especially the theme song, but some of the things the music cues were iconic too that they had, and people got used to that. You know, just those little da 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 da. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Took all that out. Wow. The second season, you're going, this is something seems wrong.
Yeah, that's not right. So,
yeah, it's kind of crazy, but I'm glad there is YouTube, and you know, a lot of those are just, I guess they're, I don't know what they call them, you know, blacklist sort of video that somebody just grabbed, her bootleg video, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Somebody just put it up there, recorded it on the video, stuck it on YouTube, and up it goes.
Put it up for somebody to see.
Great equalizer.
Yeah. What about yourself, Stan Livingston? You're doing a lot of documentary work, of course, The Actor's Journey.
Yeah, The Actor's Journey was something I've been involved in for a long time, which is sort of my payback to the industry. I mean, not just mine, a lot of people. There were 100 people involved in it. I just happened to be the guy that organized it all, and it was shot with my production company. But, yeah, we did a... it's a documentary, more of an educational piece, really, for actors, meaning actors trying to get involved in the industry, although most of them in the industry could benefit from it as well. But it's, to my knowledge, the only program on the business side of being an actor, which sounds pretty easy, you know, get your reel, get your resume, get an agent, get a manager, break into Screen Actors Guild somehow, pay for that. It's much more complex. Those are, yeah, five or six of the things that you need to do, and those are the obvious. But it's really a much deeper. It's, you know, as they say, the devil's in the details. Anyway, this particular program is 10 hours long. It covers about 60 topics that are completely related to the business, or what we call the non-performance side of being an actor. And the problem is, this stuff is not taught at the universities and colleges. It's basically you just got to go out and try and learn it on your own. And the fact that there's a 99% attrition rate of people coming to the industry who just spend $40,000 to $60,000 learning how to become actors, meaning the art and craft of acting, but could never get a handle on the business side, tells you that, you know, the material is just not out there to be found. You may think it is.
Right.
But most actors, you know, end up spinning their wheels and spending 4 or 5 years trying to pick up all the nuances of what they're supposed to do, but unless your best friend is somebody who's been doing this 20 years, it's not going to happen. So I brought 100 people together, and not just actors, but directors, producers, executive producers, agents, managers, casting people, even the president of the Screen Actors Guild, the president of the Directors Guild of America, all these people, and we put this program together called The Actor's Journey that really walks actors through this mercurial other side of the business that nobody seems to really been able to learn on their own. And it's pretty easy. You know, we walk you through the material, couldn't be easier. So
right on.
It allows actors to cut to the chase, and, you know, if you learn this material the day you get out of acting school or your four-year university, you're going to have a jump on everybody else because you're going to know what to do. That's the big problem is people get out and go, okay, what do I do next, and how do I do it, and who do I call, what do I say? So it sort of removes that ambiguous, you know, problem that most actors have as to what they're supposed to be doing when they're not up on stage or in front of a camera. People want to check it out, and just go to theactorsjourney.com. You can read all about it. 40 of these people that were involved in this project have either won or been nominated for Academy, Emmy, Golden Globe Awards. Wow. So they're the horse's mouth, so to speak. You're getting the information from people that have been doing this for 30 or more years, so
fantastic.
They're in the know.
That's fantastic. Stan, listen, our time is up. I really appreciate it. My Three Sons, one of the classics. Go to Stan's webpage, click on a link in the show notes, or stanleylivingston.com. We'll talk again soon, my friend. Take care.
Thanks again, David.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Stan Livingston, My Three Sons. Who can forget it? We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about some classic Canadian TV. And then a little later on, we're going to revisit our visit with Little Ricky from I Love Lucy. I'm Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're talking classic television, classic sitcoms. We just spent some time with Stan Livingston from My Three Sons. A little bit later on, Keith Thibodeau from I Love Lucy will be here. But you can't talk about classic television, classic sitcoms, without talking about the Canadian classic Corner Gas. And Fred Iwanek's here. Fred, how are you?
It's good. I just... it's kind of a bit of a shock to the system to realize I've been part of a classic. I guess that means I'm an old man now.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but no. When you sit down and look at it, and I emailed you earlier on and told you that we're doing this show tonight. We had you on just before the movie started. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But talking about classic television, you and I are about the same age. We remember the My Three Sons and the I Love Lucy's, and in those days there was a couple of Canadian channels, three American channels. When you looked at the ratings, 30, 40, 50 million people were watching these shows and went on for years. You got to put Corner Gas in there. It's a classic when it comes to Canadian, and I'm not trying to make a, you know, with your episode about classics that you had. Using that term describes Corner Gas to a T, because you're one of the few shows that lasted that long that people are still talking about all these years later.
Yeah, well, it's definitely had some longevity, and it seems to be picking up more fans, which is nice. And you know, it's always great to be part of something that people enjoy, and Corner Gas was that, and that always felt good. And you know, I know I'm pretty confident to speak for the whole cast. We're all pretty proud of the fact that we were able to be a part of something like that.
You know, 28 countries or 27 countries, whatever it is, the States, Canada, you know, being able to sit down and watch these shows. Again, the 50s, I Love Lucy, the 60s, and then going into the 90s and with you guys. And you can sit back and you can feel good watching them. Now, you guys just finished, or you wrapped a movie, and yep. you know that's going to make you even more popular. Well, what about that? When can, and I think I've asked you this before, when does Hank stop being Hank?
Well, I guess when people stop watching or tell us to get lost, I guess. But I think, you know, the movie, we literally just wrapped the movie. I just got home a couple days ago. I think this is the swan song. I mean, this will be sort of the end of it. It puts closure on everything. So I think this is it. I think when people see the movie, they'll see the last bit of new Corner Gas content.
You know, a little later on when we talk about I Love Lucy, Little Ricky's going to talk about Desi's drinking and Lucy being a, well, I won't say the word. Are there any inside secrets like that about Corner Gas? Is Brent really, well, we won't say that.
What? No, there's no dirt. You know, the show was what it was, and I think a lot of it had to do with the people around the show. I mean, I consider everybody on the cast my friend, and
sure.
They're really good people, and they're people that you want to have in your life. And even though, you know, sometimes you don't always keep in touch on a regular basis, they're people that when you do get to see them again, you're really happy to see them. And that's because they are just such good people. There is, you know, I'm not going to sit and pretend that it was always roses on set. Like any family, you're going to have little squabbles here and there, but there was a pretty strong mutual respect for everybody, and there's no dirt, unfortunately. I mean, the only dirt is probably me, and that's because I'm golfing today. You got me just at the end, and the reason why I'm golfing is because I was spending too much time in the bars in Regina. I had to find something to do to make sure I didn't die, so
I'm
probably the worst of the bunch.
Yeah, we got to watch the Inside Edition, and Geraldo will be chasing you guys down. Fred Iwanek's here. We're talking about Corner Gas on our classic sitcom show tonight. What about the people of Rolo, the people of Saskatchewan? You saw it with the Kickstart program and then the filming and then the final scene where everybody's singing the theme song. Boy, you know, people sure love you guys. How do you explain that?
You know, I don't know. It's one of those things where it just clicked. It was a show that, you know, Brent always said, he goes, he just wanted to make a TV show that he liked and then put it out there, and then whatever happens, happens. You can't control it. And we just lucked out. I mean, people latched onto the show. They'd enjoyed it. I mean, I always say, I've said it before, and I've heard it said by other people, that it's just one of those shows that the whole family can sit
yeah.
down in front of the TV, and there's something for everybody. You don't have to worry about covering the kids' ears, and they're still going to get a laugh. And there's... it's kind of a rarity nowadays on TV, and maybe that had something to do with it. I know the characters are kind of kooky and crazy, but in a real way, and people connected with the characters maybe. But I don't know. I'm not smart enough to tell you exactly why. I'll just take it. I'll I'll accept it and say thank you.
Well, you're definitely part of the family from here in Saskatchewan, across Canada, and around the world. The Corner Gas Gang is just that. You feel good when you sit down and you watch an episode, and I'm sure it'll be the same when it comes to the movie. But let's talk about media and television today somewhat, Fred. Again, we're going back on tonight's show to the 50s and 60s and you guys with Corner Gas. But when you turn on the multi-hundred channel universe today and you see some of the stuff that's on there, it just makes you wish that there were more My Three Sons, I Love Lucy's, and Corner Gas's. I know it's difficult for you because you're still in the industry, but what are your thoughts comparing yesterday to today?
Well, like you say, we're around the same age, and I definitely, I mean, I'm drawn to those types of shows. I mean, shows like Cheers, and I remember when I was a kid, I liked Hogan's Heroes, and those kinds of sitcoms where, you know, it's not that it wasn't racy. I mean, there was stuff that, you know, was kind of on the edge, but they just had a classy way of handling that kind of stuff, I guess. And now with, you know, I know everyone says it, with reality TV, it's changed the whole landscape, and people want, I don't know if people's attention spans are shorter nowadays, or they just, you know, you really want to escape and you don't want to think. You just want to watch people be idiots, and that makes you feel better about yourself. I have no idea, but it's sure a lot different than when I was a kid. And I don't know. I'm like you. I really like the old style sitcoms, and there's not really too much like that anymore. And I don't know if there ever will be. I don't know. So yeah. One of them's got to come along and become a huge hit again, and then everybody will try to recreate that, right?
Well, we need more Brent Butts and Fred Iwanek around to create these types of shows. But Stan Livingston was just telling me, and if you can imagine, growing up on the Desilu set, you're doing your show, and then you can walk a half a block, and there Hogan's Heroes is being filmed, and then a little bit down from there is Mission Impossible, and you get to hang around with those guys. What about that? What is life on the set like?
Well, we were completely isolated out in Saskatchewan. We couldn't, if we walked off the set, we were in the middle of a canola field. We didn't have that luxury. But I couldn't imagine. That must have been amazing. I mean, a lot of Canadian television, since I've been in the business, you're usually either on a separate studio or you're on location, and there's really not much around you to kind of go and watch and be a part of.
Were you able to bring anything home with you? I know you love the old truck.
I love the truck. I'm trying hard to get first dibs on that truck. I heard it went into storage, and I made sure the producers knew that if it goes for sale, I got to be the first call.
Yeah, absolutely. What about now, Fred Iwanek? What's on the next adventure for you? And I'm sure these are adventures.
Yeah, they are. Well, you know, I'm debating whether I'm going to stay in Canada or give it a go down in the States again, or I've also started up some writing projects that I need to focus on the next couple months here. So I'm just going to play out the rest of the year and see where I'm at and just kind of go with the flow right now.
Well, you're an awesome actor. Corner Gas, the movie, released around Christmas time. We put a link in the show notes to Fred's webpage. Always a pleasure having you on the show, and classifying Corner Gas with the other classic sitcoms tonight is my pleasure and definitely something that you guys deserve. Thanks, Fred.
Oh, thanks, and always a pleasure to talk to you anytime.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, ciao.
That's Fred Iwanek from Corner Gas, a Canadian classic, and Corner Gas the movie will be released around Christmas time. I sat down with, and this is for the TV audience and for you guys that are listening, because I thought I would add this. I sat down a few weeks ago with little Ricky, Keith Thibodeau from I Love Lucy, to talk about his life on the show and what it was like to work with Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. Here's Keith.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. You have a bad day? I had a bad day last week. I came home and I was flipping around the TV channels and a show that's been on since the early 1950s and continues on today is I Love Lucy. And I sat back, watched it, and I walked away, and I was feeling a lot better. And how do you go wrong with programming like that? Keith Thibodeau is here. He was little Ricky on the show, and it's a big kick to have him today to talk about what he's doing now and those days of I Love Lucy. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you very much, Dana. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a big pleasure. Tell us a little bit about your time with Lucy and Desi. How old were you? How long did it last?
Well, when I was signed to the I Love Lucy show or Desilu Studios, it was when I turned 5 years old, 1956, and it was for a 4-year contract. Actually, I think that's right. It's been so many years now. But I was on for 4 years with the Lucy Desi format, with the Out of Lucy, and then also the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, if some of your listeners will remember that. And that was part of my business until they divorced in 1960, when in the last episode was filmed and they got divorced and the show ended. And then I went on to do a few other things in Hollywood before I returned back to the South in southern United States, in Mississippi, actually Louisiana.
And you spent some time with Andy Griffith Show too, didn't you?
Yeah, right after that. That's what I was mentioning. Yeah, I did the Andy Griffith Show, which is a great pleasure to do, and it was fun to do. And I got to know Ron Howard and was good friends with him on the set. And he used to, it's funny, he used to ask the writers to write in a part for Keith so I can play with him.
Oh, there you go,
Keith. It was just a fun kind of a atmosphere. We spent a lot of time, you know, playing catch outside and going to the cafeteria there at the studio and sitting next to people like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore and Danny Thomas, you know. So it was just, that was part of our lives and part of my play area when I was younger.
Although they live on in infamy on television and videotape and CDs and all that, sadly we're losing a lot of our television stars. We don't have the same type of quality television as we do as we did then, as we do today. In fact, commenting about today's TV, I've had Stan Livingston on the show, Keith, several times, talking about his days on My Three Sons, and we're going to talk about Bill Frawley in a few minutes. But growing up with TV the way you did, being in the industry and looking at it today, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, basically the same as what you're saying. It's the quality has. I don't know how you want to say that, but it's just cheapened, you know. I think the overall industry has just cheapened as time has gone on, and it's just worn thin, and it's just worn out. You know what I'm saying? It just feels worn out, and there's no real life to it. There's no real substance to it, and it's just a lot of trash, you know. I mean, there are some things on that are okay to watch, you know, and worth watching. But like you say, you know, the best things that I can watch are things like The Honeymooners, Isle of Lucy, you know, and Andy Griffith, you know, to name a few, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Keith Thibodeau is here talking about his time on I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball, what was she like?
She was a great actress, and a lot of people think that Lucy was, you know, crazy and funny, and a lot of women, especially, you know, married women with children and husbands, identify with Lucy, and you know, they come up to me and say, you know, I'm just like Lucy, you know, and it's funny because I in my laugh in myself, and I'm saying, you know, no, you're not really like Lucy, because she really wasn't really like that, you know, and but she was a great actress, and we worked together, you know, of course, on the set, and she was like my mom on the set, and she took care of me, and she made sure that the tech guys and the grips and whatnot that worked on the set were very good with their language around me, and gave me gifts on my birthday, and introduced me to her son and daughter, Desi Jr. and Lucy Jr., and I became great friends with them when I was younger. In our early childhood, we were best of friends, and I was probably one of the only people that they would trust to come over to the house. And I just remember the summers we spent in Del Mar and at their ranch in Corona and of course, Palm Springs, their home, their different homes. And it was just an interesting life. probably a life that I didn't really want that life, because I saw so much heartache and stuff going on between their marriage, you know, between Desi and Lucy's marriage, and
sure, yeah.
And so there was a lot of tension, a lot of fighting, a lot of anger, a lot of stuff that really, as kids, it was very frightening, you know, at sometimes.
I understand. Desi Arnaz, we need not say any more about him, his music, his ability, your ability to play the drums. How much fun was it to play the drums and have Desi in the background watching you?
That was fantastic. I mean, Desi was a great guy. You know, he was very down to earth, and he appreciated, you know, musicians, of course, because he was one. And he was really sort of like the stabilizing influence for me on the show, believe it or not. I mean, of course, his alcoholism and stuff began to wear thin on his marriage and his life in general. But in retrospect, he was just a really nice guy who was just a down-to-earth guy from Cuba who appreciated the fact that he came to America and made good, you know.
You know, it's just interesting to hear the behind-the-scenes comments from you, because, you look at television from that era. Again, I mentioned at the start how you can have a bad day, sit down, watch Lucy, laugh, and walk away and forget about your problems. But real life was actually happening behind the scenes, and one of the things that happened behind the scenes was Fred and Ethel, Vivian Vance and Bill Frawley, they really didn't get along well. Is that true?
Well, that's the inference there, that they bickered with one another, and as a kid, it's hard to really, you know, as a 5-year-old to 9-year-old is really how old I was. So it was kind of hard for me to understand grown-up stuff, but I could feel those kinds of moments and tension as we were, say, waiting to come on the set, you know, or come on and speak our lines. There was a little back and forth between them and a little bit of tension, but I really did not see a lot of that, maybe because Lucy made sure that there wasn't going to be any stuff, bad languages to make bad thoughts in my mind and all that, you know,
sure.
Because maybe she calmed the whole situation down, but I didn't really see a lot of that. Fred, I should say William Frawley, Bill was just a good old guy, and Viv was just a, you know, good old gal, and they were professional. They did their job. We would meet where the coffee and donuts were, and in the morning, you know, before makeup or whatever. And Fred or Bill would say, you know, how's the world treating you today, Keith? You know, it's a great day, though, isn't it? And so he was that kind of a old school classic kind of guy, you know. And Viv was a professional. And was great in the role. I mean, it was like the whole show was like a puzzle, you know?
Yeah.
It couldn't have been the show that it was without the people that was in the show. The writers, the director, the cameramen, the makeup people. I mean, it was just the perfect scenario for a funny sitcom.
Keith Thibodeau's here, Little Ricky from I Love Lucy, for about another 5 minutes. Why the fascination with the program all these years later? This is a television show that will never go off the air. What do you think? How come it still endures?
You know, I think it just, like I said before, a lot of people identify with it, and it's crazy, it's stupid, but a lot of people are crazy and stupid and silly in their lives. And there's family issues. There's I want this, but I can't have this, but I'm going to get this. type situations, you know, and it just identifies with it crosses cultures and whatnot because it's just funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is funny, and thankfully some of the TV channels that are out there, MeTV, TV Land, other ones that still air these types of programs, were able to live on and continue watching them. What about Lucy's family, Keith? Do you keep in touch with them at all?
You know, I see and talk with their son Desi and their daughter Lucy. You know, we keep up Facebook type things, and we talk occasionally on the phone, and I see them at a function every once in a while. But you know, we're in three different parts of the land now. She's in Palm Springs, and I think Desi's in Boulder City, Nevada. And but we just live different lives, and we do stay in touch. You know, we will always be able to share those times together that we had as kids and the fun we had together and the experiences we had together. We'll always have that, you know, that connection, you know.
Absolutely. Tell us what you're doing today.
I went on after the Al and Lucy show, and my parents were separated, and I began to play in bands and music and got more into my gifting of playing drums, and I played rock and roll for many, many years, and was into the drugs and all that, and went basically the pathway of child star actors, and was headed for disaster. And at this point in my life, God gave me the grace to believe in Jesus, and I became a Christian, and my life changed, and I began to tell my band about my relationship with God, and they became Christians, and we began to be a Christian rock band in the 80s. I played for a decade, recorded nine albums, and then after that, I left and felt God was telling me to put music on the shelf, and my wife is a ballet dancer, and she's a silver medalist in international ballet competition. And she was quite well known in the ballet world, so we had felt that God was leading her to start a Christian ballet company, much like David and the Giants were a Christian band that was formerly a rock band. And we are right now, I'm the executive director, and my wife is the artistic director. We're the founders of Ballet Magnificat, which is a Christian ballet company, America's premier Christian ballet company. It's we have two companies. We have a School of the Arts. We have a trainee program. We have a summer workshop that attracts over 300 students for 2 to 4 weeks, from 11 years old to 25 years old. And I wrote a book called Life After Lucy back in 1994 that was published, and tells my whole story. And we have a daughter who just had a grandson, so we are grandparents for the first time. We are excited about that. She married a former NBA player, Bryce Drew, who's pretty famous for the shot in the big basketball tournament, the college basketball tournament, and played with the Bulls, the Hornets, and the Rockets. And we're just really proud of the fact that we are blessed with a beautiful daughter and son-in-law and grandson, and we are blessed. You know, God's been good.
Sounds fantastic. Keith Thibodeau, Little Ricky from I Love Lucy, thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. It's been a big kick talking to you.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's Keith Thibodeau from I Love Lucy. Thanks to Stan Livingston from My Three Sons, Fred Iwanek from Corner Gas, and, of course, Keith. I thought I would take you back a little bit and talk about some classic television. This is Classic Radio here on Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.